Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight familiar, but I'm party.
And Jake Latondras.
I am bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, didn't say it.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line podcast. I'm Rocky LaFleur, sitting in the Duck South Studios on this Friday morning. It's actually like Tuesday or Wednesday night. I'm not even really sure. But joining me tonight, old Spence.
Yeah, man. Some of us have to work for a living.
Hey, let me say this, man. So I'm at the barn a week ago Friday, getting ready to go to our what's called Dixie National in Jackson, Mississippi. Josh comes by to pick up some Duck South gear from me to take to a Delta Waterfowl banquet up in Corinth, Corinth.
Like, were you literally in the barn grooming goats? Is that what you were doing? Trimming them up, brushing them out? Okay. All right, I was just making sure. I mean,
so Josh walked in. He, of course, his greetings, but the first thing that comes out of his mouth is, "Have you checked Instagram?" I'm like, man, I've been busy all day. I don't have time to go to the bathroom, much less check Instagram. He said, "You need to go check it out." Spence is in Missouri, and they are waylaying some geese.
we had a good time. There's goose nerds and duck men. Those are the two kinds of waterfowl hunters. Kind of geese and ducks kind of divide everybody in the waterfowl community. And so this is the third spring in a row that Dylan has tried to get me to come up there to Missouri and hunt with him and all his buddies and everything. And so I decided we'd go up there this year. And I mean, Dylan's going anyway. As soon as Arkansas duck season closes, you can bet he's going to hunt the last 9 or 10 days or whatever they got up there. Cause like the Midwestern states, you can hunt those big honkers until Missouri. I think it's February 6th and Oklahoma or Kansas is like February 12th or 17th or something. It goes for a while, but those boys up there, they think that late honker hunting is some kind of fine. So I conceded and decided we'd go up there and try it out.
So is it resident geese or is it migratory geese?
Man, I wish I had a dollar for every time somebody has asked me that. Most of the time when people ask that question, they ask, are they tame geese? I had somebody ask that yesterday, like, are these tame geese or wild ones? Like, well, I mean, they're wild. They're definitely wild, but I mean,
I've even heard people try to sound smart and call them domestic geese.
but it depends on who you ask that question. If you ask, you know, the goose goobers that question, they're going to tell you that these big old ball draggers migrate from the northern reaches of Saskatchewan. If you ask a duck killer, they're going to tell you that those geese live on a golf course and they gang up on ponds in people's neighborhoods. I think there's a lot of migratory geese, a lot of migrating honkers that they're shooting. But there's some resident ones too, and they mix in there together. But I mean, it ain't shooting ducks in the trees, but it's pretty fun for the first week of February. So,
all right, there's two cool parts of this goose hunting I got to talk about. We've got to talk about. Number one, Mr. Cowboy himself, Dawson,
wrestled. Oh, Lord, yes. Man. So,
I gotta ask
so
about
Dawson.
That first,
yeah,
and then
so
I'll
Dawson,
jump into the second
Dawson's,
one.
All right. Well, Dawson's worked for me kind of since, man, I mean, he was a struggling, half-ass, half-hearted college kid, pardon my French, at Southwest Community College when he first filmed for me. And we have not ever once, like, fun hunted together, I don't think. Every time he's ever been with me, he's been filming. And so he... Jed Lamb called me and said, man, are y'all going to Missouri? And I said, yeah, we are. And he said, can I go? And I said, sure, I don't care. He said, I got all the snow goose operation ironed out. I can manage to take off a few days. And I said, all right, well, come on. And next day, you know, he said, well, Dawson wants to come. And I said, that's fine. And so Dawson came, and I mean, we had a hell of a time. We absolutely had a ball. And some of these, you know, everybody's got something that they do on a hunt like this, like in the afternoon. You know, some guys take a nap. Some guys absolutely don't take a nap. Well, Dawson's not much of a nap taker. Neither is Blake Hall, and neither is Derek Goddard. They don't like taking a nap. I like to take a nap. I like coming back, eating big, and then I'll sleep till dark. But so in the afternoon, Dawson was like, we're going to find – he said, I need a cowboy hat. I've been needing a cowboy hat real bad. So we found this Western Supply store, and this son of a gun tried on every cowboy hat in this place. And I promise you, there were 200 of them. Everything from Stetsons to Jason Aldean spring break looking hats. And he finally found him one. It was $100 cowboy hat. He put it on, and he said, man, take my picture. He said, I look like a cowboy. Yeah, you do. You look just like a cowboy. He said he tried on a few other things. He found him a pearl snap denim shirt, and he put it on. He come out of the dressing room. He said, Spitz, can I ride your horses once in a while just wearing this outfit? He said, I just feel like a cowboy when I got this on. I said, you can come ride those horses anytime you want to, Dawson. Before long, he bought a brand new pair of blue jeans, and he had a whole get up, and so. We told him that if he was going to spend that much on a cowboy hat and a bunch of denim pearl snap stuff, that just needed to be his outfit. And I, bless his heart, I think he's worn it a dozen times since then. He's worn it just about every day. He looks good in it. He fills it out.
All right, so the second question in this is trip.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You talk about having a big time, son. I mean... Can you imagine being in first grade and getting to go on a road trip?
Yeah. Your next video, man, I hope you got all the footage in the world of him.
I've got a lot. I mean, we're trying not to overdo the trip thing, but
that kid's awesome.
You, son, he had the time of his life. He doesn't care anything about shooting a shotgun. But he figured out real quick that, you know, when we shot into geese, that he could get up and run out across there on dry ground and pick them up. And I mean, after doing it two or three times, then he decided that he was going to try to tackle one. So he form tackled a few of them. Well, Friday night or Thursday night when we were there, went and ate dinner, and then we were laying around the hotel room, and he started clicking through the channels, and he found Swamp People. And he'd never watched an episode of Swamp People. And he watched his first episode of Swamp People. It turned out to be a Swamp People marathon on whatever, the Discovery Channel or whatever. He watched it till dang near midnight, eating candy and watching Swamp People. And he thought when they pulled those great big old alligators up beside the boat and put the .22 in the back of their head and that quarter-sized spot and shot them, he thought that was the greatest thing he had ever seen in his entire life. He kept, Daddy, come here and look at this. Look at this, Derek. Look at this. They're shooting these alligators in the back of the head with a .22. Boom. Look at this. He kept on. Well, we're all just like, yeah, that's a cool trip. That's cool. Yeah. You know, we've seen it a bazillion times. And anyways, the next morning, he went running out there after those geese, and instead of tackling them the next morning, he took his BB gun, and there'd be one of them out there crippled, and he'd run out there, and he'd step on them square in the back, and he'd put his BB gun right down on the back of their head and squeeze the trigger.
They do that.
They start that convulsing, that death twitch, as my dad calls it, and you know, they'd flop around, and he'd stand there over him and hold his hands up in the air. Got him! I got him! Come back up to the blind. Oh, he had a big time. I'm telling you, he had a big time. So,
oh, man.
I'm hurting. He had never had a Mountain Dew in his life. And on the way up there, he drank a Mountain Dew and ate beef jerky. And, I mean, that kid, the look on his face is like he'd found, you know, Nirvana. And he drank Mountain Dew. There ain't no telling how many Mountain Dews he drank while we were gone. I mean, Funyuns. It was Mountain Dew and Funyuns. That was his thing. Funyuns and beef jerky and Mountain Dew. I mean, he stunk like an old man fart and drank Mountain Dew the whole time he was there. Absolutely loved it. So,
you know, there's your no first telling Mountain what Dew is a special thing. It is a real special thing. I can remember, you know, when we were young, most of your sodas came in bottles, glass bottles.
Right.
And I can remember those old Mountain Dew bottles, man. The ones in the plastic bottles today do not taste like the old Mountain Dews.
No, they don't. They don't, but. He
and used to have the Mountain Dew ponies. Remember the Mountain Dew ponies?
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, those are the good old days. I remember buying Gatorade in a glass jar. I remember going to, you know, Sam's Club or one of the wholesale Osco Drug or I don't remember, one of them stores with my dad and buying cases of orange Gatorade for duck camp, and they were in those, I mean, a glass jug. Can you imagine in today's world a glass Gatorade jug on the sidelines of a basketball court or something? I mean, but that was what you did, you know? Of course, you know, every kid on the bench didn't have a Gatorade back then, you know? Nobody's, it was like drink water out of a paper cup. Now everybody's kid got a Gatorade and a special drug jug drinking out of and all that. But yeah,
I remember the glass Gatorade bottles too well.
Yeah, those tops that pop like that, you know, those metal
tops.
As soon
as you open it.
Yeah, man. But
let me tell you this real quick. So my senior year of high school, we had after school workouts for basketball and got through working out, and I was going bow hunting that afternoon.
Yeah.
Me and a buddy jumped in a car, and our school kind of sit in a bad neighborhood out in the middle of a cotton field.
Uh-huh.
So we're driving back in town, and my buddy pokes me and said, I bet you $5 you won't throw that Gatorade bottle at that.
Stop sign?
No, at the Democrat walking down the sidewalk.
Oh, golly. Dang.
And so I intentionally did not hit her or want to try to get close to her. But when I did, my elbow hit the curvature in the window. And I was going to throw way past her. And when I did, it landed right at her feet. You know, did not think anything about it. Did not. After that day, it didn't get, you know, it broke close to her, didn't hit her, or anything like that. Went bow hunting, killed an 8-point that afternoon. Get back to school, pulling in the parking lot the next morning. The principal is standing in the driveway waiting as students come in. He flags me, he points at me, and stops me. Go to my office right now. Like, what the heck have I done? Matter of fact, I had just gotten elected student body president 2 days prior to this.
Oh, man.
So I go to his office, and he said, I know what you did. Just go on and admit it. I said, what? I didn't skip practice or anything. He was a coach, too. He said, I know what you did. Just tell me. Yesterday when you were leaving school, and I was like, oh, shit. I said, but I knew exactly what he was talking about, and I try not to lie. I said, I didn't hit her. It was on, you know, kind of threw that extra in there. I said, it was on accident. I promise it was an accident. Anyway, it turns out this bottle falls at this older lady's feet, breaks into pieces, cuts her legs wide open. She walks up to the school to get medical attention, and her legs are just bleeding out everywhere. And then on top of that, it turns out to be the school mate.
Custodian. She knew exactly who you were.
Oh, my God. I've never seen her. I've never been there after school to see who was cleaning up the school. And so, you know, 5-day suspension. Never been in trouble in my life, ever. So, senioritis,
you got,
gets by, everybody.
You got
senioritis got and Gatorade bottles, glass bottles, don't go together.
Jeez, yeah, no kidding.
All right, so enough about me. I got to ask you about this. 2 weeks ago, week and a half ago, dude, can you top the webisode that you put out? I'm hearing that from everybody. I'm not just asking that personally. Can you top it?
Man, I don't know. I'm sitting on a couple pretty good ideas. Dylan and I've got a couple things cooking that I don't know if everybody else will find them cool, but I think they'll be pretty cool. I don't know whether we can or not. We've kind of been pondering on the dog one for a while. We were maybe going to do it last year.
Did you have any clue it would be that big? And I'm looking at it from an internet marketing perspective. That thing's huge.
Yeah.
It is huge.
Yeah. I mean, there was part of me that thought that this one would probably do better than anything we've done, just because it wasn't a whole bunch of just hard hunting footage. And so I figured that it would appeal to more people than just guys. Like, our demographic, the people that watch the stuff that we create is 18 to 40 year old men in about a 12 state region. That's kind of our demographic, and we get more than that, but that's every time we put something out, I can look on the back end at the demographics, and it's like predominantly 18 to 40 year old men. And so, you know, I thought this one had a chance to do a little better because it appealed to an audience that we weren't already kind of, you know, to a new audience, a new demographic. And that's really what happened is people just, a lot of guys tagged their girlfriends or their wives and shared it. And a number of people picked it up and plugged it, just without us asking, without coordinating it. And I mean, social media is pretty fascinating to me. I wish I understood better could predict better what's going to make somebody want to share something or make somebody, you know, make something get some traction. But I mean, I was very pleased with it for sure. Dogs are special, man. I mean, I don't know. I still hadn't listened to what Rob said, but I can only imagine he either said something about dogs or I don't know. What did he say on Mondays with Rob?
Oh, it was all good.
Mm.
Oh, Rob's always going to throw a joke out there at you.
I will say,
he loves you so much.
He was supposed to have one of those Brook pups. He bailed on it. That's his loss, though. Bless his heart.
But hey, you've always been wide open whenever I ask you anything. So I want to ask you this. Whenever you put out something that big, do your sponsors call you up and say, man, awesome job. Dude, this is why we get behind you. I know they don't say that. Do they call you up and say,
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely they do. I mean, they don't do that on every episode. But I would say, you know, we did 10 episodes last year. We're 5 episodes in this year, 15 episodes. I would say I hear from a sponsor on every one, sometimes more than one sponsor. For sure. This one I heard from almost all of them. I mean, they just really liked it and thought it was awesome. And, everybody can relate with it. You know, it's just one of those things that just it crosses over. You know, you put out honker footage, the duck guys are like, man, it's geese. You put out duck footage, it's like the honker guys are going, oh, yeah, anybody could shoot those little pea-headed greenheads, you know. I mean, everything you put out hunting-wise is polarizing. You put out a turkey hunting clip and it's shot over a decoy, you're going to have the snobs that are like, oh, I don't hunt over a decoy. You fan one up, and there are going to be people that are, I don't fan, you know. I mean, I got opinions about all that too, but, I mean, if the funny thing about that episode, more than anything else we've done, is it's just maybe the dad episode last year was kind of the same way, but it's not polarizing. People can relate in some form or fashion. Just about everybody's life's been touched by a good dog, whether they've owned one or not. And so that was probably the coolest thing about that one.
I mean, they've got to be sitting in the background, though, just smiling and thinking, man, whew, made the right move getting, you know, hitching up with this guy.
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, none of them have said that. Our sponsors are very kind. I mean, I remind Dylan pretty often, and all the rest of our guys. I mean, we're just regular people. Like, we're not. I mean, I think of Jimbo Ronquest and John Stevens and Rick Dunn, and I mean, I think of those guys as like the heroes, the movie stars. I don't think of anything we're doing as anything more than just a couple knuckleheads with a Mac and a DSLR. And I mean, I don't think about our sponsors. I don't know. I don't think about it like that. But I can tell you that more than ever, like here recently, Dylan and I have talked about it. But I mean, I'm very grateful just to be a part of the hunting industry and be a part of you know, helping to market some of these companies. I mean, it's pretty neat to step back every now and then. I just went to SHOT Show, and it was really neat at SHOT Show this year relative to the first time that I went to SHOT Show, just that people appreciate what you're doing, they're aware of it, and then to kind of take a step back and go, man, you know, I remember coming here when I didn't have any relationships with any of these companies. I knew a few people's names, and I remember, you know, as a younger man wishing, man, how cool would it be to shoot a Benelli shotgun because they put one in your hands and wanted you to represent their brand? And how cool would it be to wear Mossy Oak because, you know, Toxie believed that you could influence somebody else to wear Mossy Oak? And, I mean, so I don't ever think about it from a standpoint of I mean, I feel very grateful just to be able to represent some of those brands that have been brands that I would have gone in a store and picked or already had, you know, have my whole life gone into a store and picked out. It's pretty fun to see them share something that you make and then be proud of it, like that they helped bring that to bear. You know what I mean? That's been a neat thing.
I'll say this. I had this conversation with Ramsey today. You step back and you take a look at that list the other night. Ryan Bassam put it out there. Hey, he thinks the biggest influencers in the waterfowl world are right now. Two names I saw the most are Spencer Halford and Ramsey Russell.
Yeah. Which is it's mind blowing to me that I don't know. I've told you that before.
I'm very grateful, but it's wild. It's good. I think that there needs to be, and I told this to Ryan when I was talking to him a couple of weeks ago. I think it's good that new leadership, new people to look up to. You know, you've got different ages of people. There's always seems like it's just been a young crowd for the young people to look up to. Yeah. Now you got a lot of different ages in there. You got talking about you and Ramsey and experiences. Some great people to look up to. It's just not the old regular old. And don't get me wrong, Jimbo's one of the grandfathers of it all. There's a lot of good people that are really pushing themselves to the top that are great to look up to. That's what I'm trying to get at.
Well, I appreciate that. I started to comment on that thread the other night. I mean, that's one of the highest honors anybody could ever pay is to publicly say that they think that you're influential in the industry. I mean, I still feel grateful just to be a part of the industry is really what I was trying to say. And then the idea that my opinions would influence somebody is, I mean, that makes you feel pretty good. I'm not going to lie. I just appreciate people watching the stuff that we make.
I think what's happening in the world, like people that these people that are trying to weed out through the influencers in the hunting industry. Correct me if I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. I can tell you right now, just because Huntress A has a million followers on Instagram, she tells me that she loves the new Drake waiters. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not going to make me go buy them.
There's a lot of that right now. I mean, that's really what a lot of the discussions at all of the meetings that I was in at SHOT Show and things, that's what the discussions are. What's happening in the industry is you have people are actually now calling them influencers. This is an influencer. I've heard that term now in the last 4 or 5 months more than I've never heard that term before. And now people are like identifying influencers and who are the people that influence our target audience. And so you got marketing people that back up and go, okay, who is our target audience? All right, it's 18 to 40 year olds. They live anywhere from Oklahoma down to Florida, up to Kentucky-ish, and that the Confederacy basically is about what that looks like the southeastern United States. That's our sweet spot. So somebody with some level of big picture marketing concept steps back and go, okay, who are the people that influence those guys? Before they were thinking about who actually influences that group of people, they were just looking at pure numbers. And so a person that has a lot of appeal, you know, gets a lot of interest, but there's a lot of movement, not to say that there's a lot of movement away from the huntresses, but there's a lot of movement that I see in the industry.
And I didn't mean to use hunters in there. It didn't have to be.
No. I mean, it's realistic. I mean, it's a real thing. I'm not bashing them right now. It's a real thing. They're a part of this influencer movement. But what I see going on is a lot of movement towards not just it. The best way I know to describe it is like if you took out a television commercial on Channel 5 tomorrow night and you advertised Duck South to everybody in the greater Jackson, Mississippi area, or everybody in the Memphis, Tennessee area, you would put that in front of a huge number of people, but you'd be paying for a lot of eyeballs that are not part of your target audience, right? I mean, that's by definition, that's mass marketing. As the ebb and flow in the industry happens in social media, at first you have like social media is appealing because it's not mass marketing, but in a way there's early on social media marketing, there's still kind of marketing to a mass audience because they haven't really defined who their niche is. And as social media marketing gets better and more effective, people are narrowing down their target audience, and they're narrowing down who the influencers are over their target audience. And so there's a push for quality influencers. Not to say that anybody's not a quality, but there's a push for finding influencers that are most effective to their target audience, if that makes sense. And
that makes a ton of sense. It goes out back to this. If influencer A has a million followers, in a mass marketing campaign, you can't expect to get but about 3% return on that.
Right,
okay?
Right.
3% of a million is 30,000, right? Now, I take somebody like Spitz. I don't know what your statistics are social media wise. Let's just say you have 500,000 followers. Let's say 500,000. You're going to get about a 30-40% return on that. So that's 100. Let's just use the bottom end. That's 150,000. You get quality from somebody like you. That's what I'm saying. And if Spitz says, "Hey, man, these Drake waiters, they really are great," I'm probably gonna try them out just to see.
Yeah, it's a. There's a lot of
likelihood
in the marketing.
The likelihood of trying it out is more likely.
There's definitely a push towards that for sure.
You and I could talk about that for days. Look, before we leave the whole webisode talk, and I got to ask you this. Do you and Dylan, do y'all kind of sit down, after you kind of piece the footage together and write out the script that goes along with it? I'm telling you, it is unbelievable. The video footage is absolutely awesome. Don't get me wrong. But the script behind it, wow.
I mean, we've done it different on just about one. But generally what happens is, so we sit down at the beginning of the year and we try to come up with, like this year we had six, we have to do a minimum of six waterfowl films. We were trying for seven. And we might get seven out. I don't know whether February is just not a great time to be launching waterfowl films. But so we sit down with a bunch of ideas, and if we need six or seven films, then we try to come up with 10 to 11 ideas, and we try to map out those ideas. And then we try to pair up kind of the idea with a place or an event or a trip or something like that. And so we kind of film with the intention of using one of those ideas, and we try to just see what happens on the trip. I mean, we don't really film while we're filming. We need to do a better job of like who, what, when, where, and why, that kind of stuff, like a television show, but we're not very good at that. And so what event that happens, a trip or something, and then we come back from it and Dylan starts editing, and he kind of gets kind of going on the footage, and then he'll show me what we're working with or some kind of the high spots and get a fit. And then I get a feel for it, and we bounce it around kind of what we should say. And then I try to write a script, and he'll help me edit it some, and we'll kind of go back and forth. But then eventually we'll kind of narrow it down to what the script needs to say and record it, and then try to match that up with the footage. And Dylan's just really good at matching that up with the footage. And so if we're kind of on the same page about roughly what a lot of times we'll have a pretty good idea of what the voiceover is going to say, but not have it actually like typed out. And then we'll once we kind of see how the footage fits the idea that we were working with, then we'll hammer out the details of it. But I wish we sat down together more. We don't have a good office with a great big 4K screen that we could watch it back on. That's kind of my next goal, is I'd really like to have a place that we can, a conference room or something that we can go and collaborate, because there's I think brainstorming is like my favorite thing to do. Sit and just talk about ideas and just talk and just kind of spitball ideas and see where conversation takes us. And I'd like to have a place where we could do that and invite people in to, you know, like sometimes we'll have an idea and then when you kind of mention it to somebody, then they'll say something and then they'll say something else. And before long, two or three thoughts will like come together. And then next thing you know, it registers kind of a way of looking at something. And that's where the script comes from. Like every episode that we've done, I can tell you a person or a comment or a something that like broke the ice and kind of got me going on the script.
Good stuff. Congratulations, man. I know that, appreciate what you're doing. It is awesome to sit back and watch from a marketing perspective, because that's kind of how my brain works. But anyway, all right, big weekend this weekend. That's the first time you and I ever met face-to-face last year was at the NWTF. Will you be there this year?
Heck yeah, man. We'll be there with good Lord willing. I won't miss that show. That's like one of my favorite. That's my favorite February event of the year. This is my, I want to say this is our sixth one or seventh one to exhibit at. And I went a couple times before that just as a attendee, just a walk. But yeah, man, I mean, that's a great show. It's pretty cool. This year, actually, there's going to be more waterfowl stuff there than there has been in the past. One of the reasons I started going to that show 6 years ago or so was because there were almost no duck call companies there. And there might have been one other, can't remember. Field and Clay Hudnall have been there a while. I want to say we both went the same year for the first time, but it's kind of why it was such a cool show. Was there were a bunch of waterfowl hunters, but no waterfowl companies there. But it's good. I mean, I'm glad, you know, Higdon has stepped up big at that show and Power Calls. And there's, I can't remember who else now off the top of my head, but there's several other duck call companies that are going to be there. And that is a really fun event. So if you've never been, I would highly recommend come visit it next year, man. Get you a hotel room at the Opryland. It's expensive, but your wife will absolutely love you for bringing her to the Opryland Hotel for Valentine's Day. And she'll probably be able to make a pretty good kiki with her bare mouth after she walks around that show for 3 days. To this day, that's probably like Lindy's most annoying sound is. It drives her nuts.
Hey, did you say the secret to that show is coming on Friday?
The what? The secret?
From the consumer standpoint and getting through there and seeing everything you need to see that standpoint.
Yes. I mean, Saturday is just, I mean, it's awesome. It's a lot of fun, but it'll wear you out because there's so many people. Yeah, I mean, if there's somebody you want to, oh, it is. And that's what makes the show so great is it's just it's 50,000 plus unique people enter that show. And I mean, they want to spend money and they, you know, they're shopping and it's NWTF is a pretty awesome organization. They've done a good job with that thing of not letting like, no offense to them, but not letting the flea market kind of booths that creep into a lot of the regional sports shows and that just kill it. You know, the people that sell a bazillion Chinese knives and 57 flavors of, you know, sugar-coated pecans. And I mean, those are all fine and good and everything, but like, if you're going to pay to get in a show like that, you want to walk around for 10 hours and see something new the whole time you're there. That's what you get at NWTF. I mean, it's quality manufacturers everywhere you look. And outfitters. That's a good show. But yeah, I mean, if you're going to buy something, if you're going shopping or wanting to see somebody, Friday is definitely the time to see somebody. If you want to visit with somebody, like talk to a person or a personality or, you know, you got it in your head, you want to meet whoever it is, Tiffany Lukoski or you know, Michael Waddell or you know, Dylan Farrell from Instagram or something. The time to meet those people is Sunday morning, as long as they're not, you know, hung over from whatever they got into on Saturday night. But Sunday morning until about 10 o'clock is pretty slow. You're in there with all the heathens and the people that don't go to church. But it's all, strangely enough, it's pretty peaceful time. I think all the, you ever been grocery shopping like on a Sunday morning while everybody's at church? It's like all the lost people grocery shopping together, and it's kind of eerie knowing that you're in the building with all these people that don't go to church. But at the same time, it's like nobody's judging each other. You can wear sweatpants and flip-flops, and nobody's looking down their nose at you. That's kind of what Sunday morning at NWTF is like.
That's pretty good.
I mean, I'm not encouraging or endorsing anybody to skip church, but every now and then it's good for you to skip church and just see what people that don't go to church do on Sunday mornings.
And you may see Rob Kroom at the Rolling Thunders booth.
You will not see Rob Kroom on Sunday morning at the Rolling Thunder booth. No chance in heaven or hell that you will see Rob Kroom on Sunday morning at the Rolling Thunder booth.
Maybe Friday, Saturday?
I would say, you know, Rob's an interesting guy.
Before you say that, let me tell you this, where it may factor into what you're about to say. Rob sent in a DNA test the other day. Rob is praying that he has black blood in him. From the last name group.
Oh, my gosh.
If he finds out this week that he has black blood, he's going to bust Nashville wide open.
Lord have mercy. Rob, on events like this, Rob is a... How do I say this without negatively reflecting on Rob? Because I want to be really kind to Rob. But Rob is in life's game of party and extroverted social events. Rob is a sprinter. He's not a marathoner. Rob can go hard for about 10 to 12 hours. Sometimes he can stretch it out to 18. But you pull a 3-day event on Rob, and he taps out halfway through. And he knows this about himself. This is why he doesn't participate in events like the Flotilla anymore and other events like that. So generally what you're going to get from Rob is, you know, Rob is going to be the Friday guy. He's going to ride a limousine to NWTF with some of his friends. He's going to walk around with an entourage. He's going to look like Jerry the King Lawler strutting around NWTF Hall. And somewhere about 4 o'clock, he'll be pretty deep into a case of Bud Lights, and he'll leave the hall and go find somewhere, and there's no telling what they will get into in the evening time. But Rob doesn't generally show back up the next morning. So I would say if you want to see Rob, your best chance is probably on Friday, unless, I don't know, he may have something else. But Rob's only going to be there one day. That's a long way of saying, I'll bet you Rob's only going to be there one day.
He put it out on the podcast the other day. He was looking for rooms. Anybody had a couch, anything, you need to give him a call. He's looking for a place to sleep Friday night.
Well, good for Rob. There's not room with me and Lindy.
I'm going to choke you up.
I mean, I'd be willing to make a pretty hefty wager Rob only makes it one day at NWTS. But he might surprise me. He might surprise me. He's definitely, he'll pull one on you and surprise you every now and then.
Well, you know, Grease and Outfitters made it an explosive entrance last year at the NWTF.
Yeah, no kidding. I wish I had a dollar for every person that stopped at the Rolling Thunder booth and asked if I was selling Greasem t-shirts. I was like, jeez, man.
Oh.
Lord have mercy. Oh, Rob.
Well, man, I'm sorry that I kept you talking off topic, not on the story tonight. I apologize. I enjoyed it. We have run out of time, and we do not have any time left to jump back into the Rolling Thunder story.
Can I plug one thing on NWTF before we hang up? So we're taking, thus far, we have only made black brutes, except for a couple very limited edition runs of colors. We're taking two pretty slick colors of the brute to Nashville, and we're only taking a limited number, and they're going to have a 2019 NWTF engraving on the back of the tone board. So you got to come to the show. Don't send me a text message on Friday or a Facebook message begging me to mail you one. You got to come to the show to buy one of them. And I think you'll be glad if you do. But if you got extra money to spend, I hope that you come to the Rolling Thunder booth on Friday or Saturday or Sunday and spend your extra money, because I've got lots of hungry mouths to feed at home. And I go to this show for one reason, and that is to help make a living, support my children. That's all I got.
So, hey, will you be in the same place that you were last year?
No, that was an awful spot. All the traffic bypassed us right there. I got a giant booth right in the middle of the hall. So I've got two aisles will converge into one booth. And on Saturday afternoon, actually, about 4 o'clock, Johnny Cash is going to play an acoustic set in my booth. And for all the people out there, in internet land that think Johnny Cash is dead and that think Elvis Presley is dead. Elvis Presley is not coming to my booth, but Johnny Cash is. And so I would suggest, you know, around 4 o'clock that you get your Sharpie and get ready to listen to some Johnny Cash. We'll be in the dead center in the main hall playing a little Johnny and June.
Saturday afternoon.
Yep. Be a good time.
All right. Well, I will be by there sometime on Friday to see you.
Good. Come see us.
But Spence, thank you again, man. It's always good to get back in the routine with you. And like I said, especially about the marketing stuff, we jumped to in the middle of it. We can sit there and talk about that all night. And you probably know a lot more about it right now than I do, and what's going on that side of it. But anyway. Thank you again for being here. We'll see you this weekend. I want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.